I mean, I still don't think Customs should have considered that 4 fluid ounces anyway, but either way, I got stopped.
Yeah, that's a good story, and a perfect time to let you guys know that we are the Criminally Mental Podcast. My name is Cody Green, or Schizophrenic Hippie.
And I'm Zach Space Dandy Galloway, and here to introduce our show is the friend of our show and the host of the VT Network, Deadman.
Welcome to the Criminally Mental Podcast, where we talk about mental health and the criminal justice system, with your two hosts, Cody Green and Zach Galloway, currently both on parole and compassionate release. Now, here's the show.
So last week, I made the joke that he voiced over porn.
No.
Apparently, he did do voice acting for some animated porn or something.
No, he did not.
I'll show you the DM. I'll show you the message.
Okay, yeah. Please do not send me the video. But if you have a DM, I will gladly take his word for it over yours.
I'm going to send your mom the video.
Do not. Do not.
Hey, Mama Green, isn't his voice so soothing?
No! Oh my gosh. This is why we can't have nice things.
There's that.
But, speaking of Zach being super old, you turned, what, 64 yesterday?
Yeah, I turned 64 years old. No, I turned 34 years old. Thank you, Cody Green. And a fun story, famous birthdays finally caught the mistake and changed my birthday to 64 to 34 and sent me an email. Yeah, and sent me an email that was like, sorry, your friend sucks. So,
where did they send you an email? Did they find your personal email finally?
Well, I mean, I sent them an email at one point, you know, so they just got back to me.
Oh, dang. Just in time for your 34th birthday, too. That's upsetting.
Right. Happy birthday present to me, though. So,
Damn. Okay. Well, I guess it is what it is. But you do know what is going on this month, don't you, Zach?
Burning Man.
No, not Burning Man.
Coachella.
No, it is Mental Health Awareness Month.
No, that can't be it.
Yeah, no, that it is, Zach. That's what it is.
Is it the Gathering? Woo-hoo!
No, it is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Pretty sure it's a gathering. But yeah, it is Mental Health Awareness Month, which is it's a cool thing for us mental health creators, I think. I mean,
I'm sorry, did you just refer to yourself as a mental health creator?
By definition, I am dragged into this monstrosity of an event alongside you, so I am a mental health creator.
You are, and I do appreciate your presence in the mental health TikTok community, even though I like to give you shit for it.
Appreciate my ass.
But we do have some really cool guests planned for this month. As you guys know, this is the one month where I am finally relevant as a creator. And on the 24th of this month is actually really cool because it lands on a Monday and it is Schizophrenia Awareness Day. So I have some cool plans for that day, as long as Zach lets me do them.
Oh, that sounds moderately dangerous. I'm in.
That sounds like it could be risky.
In honor of Mental Health Awareness Month, like Cody said, we do have some really cool guests lined up. But if there's any topics that you guys feel is kind of underrepresented in media or on shows or whatever, or just in the world, mental health topics specifically, let us know either in the chat here or DM us or leave a comment on either of our TikToks or the podcast TikTok. And we would love to use this opportunity of this month of actually having an audience that's willing to talk about mental health and really talk about some issues that haven't been really discussed. So if you have any ideas or something that you want to hear or talk about, please let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Surprisingly well said from Zach there.
I know. I had a stroke just now, I think.
You blacked out for a second?
Right.
No, seriously, though. We're really excited today. We do have a creator joining us who who talks mostly on their platforms about DID or dissociative identity disorder. But I know that specifically on my page, I always get requests to talk about things like schizoaffective disorder, OCD, post-traumatic stress disorder. There are so many ways we could go about this. And I'm really excited to bring on a bunch of different creators and talk about really relevant mental health issues. And, you know, that's part of the reason I wanted to do this podcast in general.
Yeah. And I mean, I mostly did it because I have free Mondays. But the cool thing about this creator especially is DID is one of those subjects that admittedly I know nothing about. And I feel like everyone thinks that they know something about. Because yeah. The way it's been portrayed in movies and media, in stories, whatever. So I think it's great that we have an opportunity to actually discuss the realities and some of the myths of DID and get that out in the open.
Yeah, and I know I've said this before, not only on my TikTok, but on this podcast, that one of the most common mistakes that people make about schizophrenia is they confuse it with DID. So that's actually something I get really common. People will ask me if I have alters or multiple personalities. And so it's something I have to explain pretty regularly on my page. So I'm really grateful to have met with so many DID creators on TikTok.
I feel like the two biggest, misconceptions people have about your schizophrenia specifically is one, you have DID, and two, you're possessed by the devil.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, I get that one a lot. I know, though, I do know specifically because DID creators will always comment on the videos of me talking about when people comment saying I have demonic possession. DID alters or DID systems, they get that a lot as well. That's a real.
Yeah, I would imagine that'd probably be the most common for that.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate. And I think there is, some religious trauma that can come with some of that stuff. So I am really excited. Should we introduce our guest, Zach? Would you like to do it so I don't pronounce their name wrong again?
Absolutely. Please welcome to the show someone we're really excited about, a mental health creator on TikTok and a YouTuber, Areli and Company.
Hi, guys. My name is Areli. I am a DID system of 8, as far as we know. And I am a creator on TikTok as well as YouTube. I do stuff about mental health and specifically about DID and also, other comorbid stuff that comes along with mental illness as part of the package deal. So that's what I do.
That's awesome. I'm Zach. I'm the talent of the show. I don't know if you're aware of this, but he's mostly here just for technical stuff. So yeah. We'll be talking. But thank you for coming to the show, Areli. We're really excited to have you here. Cody was a little more familiar with your content before me, but I've had a chance to go over and look over through some of your videos, and you have such the diagnosis of DID and your struggle specifically, like we said earlier, is something that a lot of people have this idea that they know something about, but admittedly, I know nothing about it. I'm sure Cody knows even less than me because that's a standard, but we're looking forward to this opportunity to really dive in and just talk about this issue. So do you want to maybe give us a description of what DID is?
Yeah, absolutely. So DID is a dissociative disorder, and it used to be called multiple personality disorder. That's what everybody knows it as, unfortunately, even though it was changed about 20 plus years ago. It's a dissociative disorder that stems from mostly childhood trauma and disorganized attachment. So basically what happens is a child is born in multiple ego states. That's just standard for pretty much every child. This is what the theory of structural dissociation says, is that all children are born into multiplicity essentially and has various ego states like hungry and sad and needing attention and wanting food and stuff like that. And these are all separate ego states. And that's kind of why children can't really hold more than one emotion or state of being at the same time. And that's why you see children go from like laughing one second to crying the next back to laughing. They can't really hold like complexity of emotion and the fluidity of how all that happens. So essentially what happens is if childhood trauma occurs repetitively And in a way that the brain decides is too much to handle, it forms amnesic barriers between these already existing ego states. And each of these ego states will develop separately as separate people and with different experiences, different personalities, different opinions on life, things they want to do, personalities. And that's another reason why it's no longer a multiple personality disorder, is it's not one person with many personalities, it's many different people with their own personalities. So that's another reason why it was changed to dissociative identity disorder, because it's various identity states.
That's, I think everyone does know it as multiple personality disorder. Even I knew that word. That's interesting that it kind of starts as a almost a self-protection. Is that kind of what I'm hearing there?
Absolutely. It's a design that's essentially there to protect the brain from having to experience all the trauma at once. So it compartmentalizes everything. So a lot of times there will be one identity state that is basically in charge of not knowing about the trauma. A lot of times that's what is considered to be the host, the person that people will most likely meet most often. In my system, I'm the host. I didn't know that I had childhood trauma. I knew I had other stuff going on, but I didn't know. And it started to come about later in my life that I started to realize there was something else that I didn't know about. And lo and behold, it comes with a whole slew of alternate identity states. We call them alters or headmates, typically, in the DID community. But everybody kind of has their own lingo as well. They're absolutely there to kind of protect each other from memories. So there's a lot of memory compartmentalization and protection from those memories of trauma.
That's really interesting, because I had always assumed that, of course, I had the same assumption about schizophrenia too. There was something you kind of always had. So I assume you went through a certain amount of time in your life just asymptomatic and not having anything. I mean, we don't like to use the word normal here, but you know, like a neurotypical life. Was that kind of what you were living at first?
I guess you could say somewhat, and it's different for everybody who has DID, especially because with DID, you kind of always have it. Because it's formed in childhood and you already have these ego states, you kind of always have DID once you have it. But for me, yeah, it's definitely the case that I thought this was normal. Like, for example, I remember in high school, I started to experience a lot of symptoms. And I would have one of my alters who would like come forward, and I'd experience the loss of control, and my body was doing stuff I wasn't making it do. I was saying things that I wasn't trying to say, like it was just happening out of my control. And I would hear this person in my head talking to me. They'd leave me notes on my computer and all this stuff. And I would talk to other people about it. And other people would say things like, oh yeah, we all have a negative voice in our head that talks to us sometimes. And I was like, oh, okay. Mine just has a name, I guess. Like, I thought it was normal. I thought it was what everybody dealt with. So I kind of chalked it off to just, you know, very active negative
imagination
self-talk.
Almost, or yeah. So was there a specific moment for you that was like, oh, this isn't normal. I need to maybe talk to someone about this.
Absolutely. So I was already in therapy for a lot of high school for various other comorbid things. And when I was 21, I was in college, and all I remember is I was fine. And then all of a sudden I wasn't. And I just found myself, there was a river running through the entire back part of the campus. And I just remember my body walking to the river and walking straight into it and just standing in the middle of the river. And it was not something I wanted to do. It was not something that I was trying to do. I was just like experiencing, it was kind of an out of body experience, you could say, where I'm watching myself do this weird, really random thing that I would never have thought to do. And I'm like, people don't do this. And a friend of mine like came running after me, like, what are you doing in the river? Get out of the river. So that's kind of the moment at which I said, like, okay.
Maybe it's time to address this.
Yeah, definitely. And I had not talked to my therapist about in high school when I was having those symptoms. I didn't tell my therapist about it. To put it like very simply, I guess, just like a little bit of background about me, I grew up a Christian and I went to a Christian school.
We all have disabilities.
The best.
We all have disabilities.
And I still consider myself a Christian, but at the time, I thought it was possessed. I thought this was because that was the only experience I had. Is, oh, I've heard of something like this, and this is what the nearest thing is that I can relate to. So of course, I didn't tell my therapist. I was like, I'm freaked out. So
finally,
I was 21, and I was like, okay, it's time to actually address this in therapy. And that's really when it started coming to the discussion of DID and dissociation and stuff.
When you were talking about, you know, just thinking it was like a normal thing, I specifically remember a memory where the first time I went to the hospital with like schizophrenic symptoms and I said, yeah, I've been hearing, you know, voices, and they're like, yeah, that's normal. I'm like, no, I'm hearing them, physically hearing them. Like, it's not one of the in your head, you know, voices. Right. I can hear people in my house who aren't there. And for them to like take so long to put that together, it just shows like even doctors, you have to really like over explain symptoms, because if you don't over explain, they're going to assume that you're just having regular inner dialogue or having just regular basic thoughts. And I'm like, no, that's not what's happening. I had a question specifically because people with schizophrenia early on tend to not be aware that they have it. Now, from what I've watched on TikTok, do most people with DID have like an idea that they have it, or is it just something that you start off not knowing you have? So I guess I'm just wondering, like, what is the level of awareness you had starting off to right now?
So that is actually so insanely different for every DID system. In general, DID, the mechanism is designed for the host to not know they have it.
Okay.
So a lot of times it's not discovered till early adulthood. Sometimes it's teen years. Sometimes, you know, it's younger. Sometimes it's not till people are in their 50s and 60s and 70s. That's happened too, where they just have no idea. Yeah, it's definitely different for everybody. I did go through a long period of my life where I definitely would never have thought that I had it. I remember like when the movie Split came out, I had not been diagnosed and I actually didn't know much about it. And I watched the movie and I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And I did a ton of research because I was like, oh, I wonder how much of this is true, like what they're saying, what's not, you know. I learned a lot about it. But I remember saying to myself, like, oh, this isn't something I experience. Like, that's for other people. This doesn't happen to me. Like, I can't even imagine what that would be like. And part of that is because DID manifests itself so differently in everybody's brain. And the other part of that was just because they portrayed it poorly. but in general, so
I actually have two questions kind of related to that. One, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, but what is your take on movies, like specifically Split, but other ones that kind of show maybe a false narrative of DID? What's your opinion on those?
That's so hard. And I'll tread carefully here because it's a very controversial subject, media in the DID community. That we actually have a video on our YouTube that talks specifically about the pros and cons of Split. And Split, obviously, the main big problem is the fact that he's painted as a villain, as a murderer, as a kidnapper, all these terrible, terrible things. And unfortunately, that's what people think of. That's what they think of when they think of DID. And I imagine also schizophrenia and other stigmatized disorders, they think, dangerous, not trustworthy, things like that.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the biggest problem, is that there's so many sources of DID media presentation that just says dangerous and villainous, and either that, so a lot of people take away violence from that, or they take away, wow, this is too ridiculous, too out there to be true. So for example, Split portrays, they take the existing research that says, oh, different alters can have different blood pressures, different levels of sight, different handwritings, things like that, different muscle memory. It takes that research and blasts it out of proportion and says, people's entire body can change and they can climb up walls and they can do all these crazy things. And that leads to people going, well, that's too ridiculous to be true then. This is a disorder that doesn't exist because that's just too crazy. So those are the two major stigmas that come from movies like Split and other things that paint us as these like fantastical people.
It almost seems like when it comes to any mental health, but specifically DID or schizophrenia or autism, the characters that we see in movies or any media is either a villain or a superhero that has magical powers because of your, you know, mental illness. Like those are pretty much the two characters that we're given in movies.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that's a major issue. That's the biggest issue I find with things like Split. I think specifically Split like did a lot of research and did portray some good things. I think the actor in particular was pretty good at portraying.
Oh, he's so hot too. Hey, Cody, what's the guy's name in Split?
James McAvoy.
Yeah, yeah.
What's his name?
James McAvoy.
Snack. That's what his name is. He's a fucking snack.
Snackavoy. James Snackavoy. So he actually did a pretty decent job because he portrayed everybody as every alter as their own person with their own set of opinions and beliefs and all this stuff. So that was great. Because a lot of people think like, okay, well, who's the real one? Who's the original one? Who's the one that I actually want to talk to? Rather than the idea that these are all just valid individual people that are their own people, rather than like additions to the real one. I think that was a positive portrayal. They did show that it's like stems from like childhood trauma, which, you know, that was correct information. So they did show that. They did not. The thing that I joke about with specifically when my one system friend will joke about the fact that the Split in particular portrays so much coordination that like your average DID system would not be able to handle. Like, we would not be able to handle a kidnapping and like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You can handle that. We're too busy staring off into the void dissociating. Like there's no way we could handle something like that. So that's the other thing, is it didn't show enough of the struggle, the daily like dissociating for hours and the PTSD and the panic attacks and like all this stuff. It didn't show enough of that. So, you know, I could go on and on forever about Split and other sources of media, but I'll let you get to your questions.
One of the really cool things, that's not really a question, it's more of a statement. I mean, one of the really cool things about both the time we live in and, you know, social media is apps like TikTok, YouTube, Grindr, I don't know, all pretty much give an opportunity for people with mental illnesses to have a platform and people to see the daily ins and outs and the problems that, you know, anyone with a mental illness faces. I mean, Cody and I have had to both take breaks from doing the show because our mental illness suffered.
Yeah,
so I think it's kind of cool that people get to see the times when it's not cute. Yeah. I mean, granted, all of Cody's stuff is not cute, but
yeah.
there are specifically some times where people will romanticize a mental illness, and I think that this is a great opportunity to show the reality of it.
Well, and that's, I mean, I know you're joking just now, Zach, but
you are never cute, not once, not ever.
No, but that's why I post videos of me having hallucinations specifically for people who romanticize schizophrenia. I want them to see the unfun side of it. Like, obviously, everyone thinks it's so cool to see people that aren't there, but then when you actually see what a symptomatic day looks like, then all of a sudden it doesn't look quite as much fun. And I would argue it's the same for like anyone struggling with any mental illness. It's never, no matter how TV or media romanticizes it, it's never what you get to see. Would you say there is, so I know we just talked about Split. Do you have a TV show or movie that you feel you could call like your favorite depiction of, or most accurate to you specifically?
That's tricky. There's definitely flaws in pretty much every depiction I've seen.
Okay.
So interestingly enough, so I watched The Flash. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah.
But that's not really necessarily a depiction of DID on purpose necessarily. But there's a character in there, and I tread carefully because there is a character in it that has quote unquote multiple personalities, and it's this one like scientist chick. Who has an alter ego who started out as a villain and did start out as the classic DID trope of like my evil side, you know? But something happened in the story where this Alter, who started out as a villain, kind of develops as a person and realizes, like, she doesn't want to be a villain. She wants to help people. She wants to. So she really goes through this whole developmental thing. And it shows how, you know, she's given all these reasons to want to be a villain, and yet she changes her life and chooses to help people with her superpowers instead. So I actually really like that depiction, and I know a lot of people might not, just because it does start out with her as like somebody who's a criminal, and or like somebody who's like relatively dangerous. But in general, I like what they did with her story. So it's The Flash, which is on the CW. I do like that. And it actually shows kind of a little bit of a depiction of what specifically one specific role of Alter often goes through. So a lot of times in DID systems, you have everybody has a role, and they kind of fit into loosely this set of roles and responsibilities to kind of help keep the system safe. And one of those roles, the most misunderstood role, is referred to as a persecutor protector. And a persecutor protector oftentimes is not dangerous most of the time to external people. A DID system is way more likely to be a victim of violence than they are to be violent themselves. So
that's most mental illness, really.
Absolutely. Very, very true. So a lot of people misunderstand that, like, oh, persecutors are dangerous. No. What they do is they self-sabotage. A lot of times they will use unhealthy coping mechanisms to deal with all the trauma that they hold. Their job is to hold all this trauma, and a lot of times that is portrayed through anger and self-sabotage and self-destructive behaviors. And 9 times out of 10, with a lot of care and love and healing, that persecutor will turn into a protector, somebody who has healthy coping mechanisms. And a lot of times they're the badasses that come out and they're ready to start swinging if somebody messes with the system. So they become some of the most effective protectors out there. But I do like that series for that reason, because I feel like it kind of shows the whole persecutor turned protector kind of thing. Somebody who becomes very like a defender, you know, for the system.
Let me ask you, you've referred to, I believe, yourself several times as the system. Is that your rap name, or is that like a thing in the DID? I mean, because first of all, if that's your rap name, dope. So the system is kind of all your alters. Is that kind of what you're hearing?
Yes. So system is the term that we use in the DID community for the body of alters. So everybody that exists in this mind, this body, is my system. We're all part of each other's system. And a lot of DID systems have like system names. And a lot of times you'll see that on TikTok is the blank system. My system is called the cloud. And that was actually made by TikTok. We didn't come up with that. So yeah, that's part of the lingo, if you will.
And Zach would probably know that if he did even the slightest a bit of research to prepare for today. But that's not really his forte.
I was busy. They were having hot dogs Mondays at the Wiener Schnitzel. I had shit to do. Sure.
All right. Fair enough. So I guess another question I would have for you is, I've been seeing, we do have a few systems in the comments today. One of them asked if you get headaches between switching. Is that a thing, switching headaches?
It's definitely a thing.
Can we call you system, or is that kind of like your guys' word? That real question. That's a real question.
You can refer, I mean, in my opinion, you can refer to anybody who is a system as a system. I wouldn't necessarily go up to a system and be like, what's up, system? Like, but you can refer to them as a system. Like, that's what we use. But I'm trying to remember your question, Cody. Switching headaches. Yeah, that's very much a thing. And it's because different alters use different sections of the brain, and they actually have brain scans where you can see the blood flow traveling as a switch happens. You see the blood flow traveling from one side of the brain to the other. And that's why switching headaches occur, is because, you know, blood just, you know, ricocheting everywhere. That's always a good time. I sometimes get switching headaches. I don't get them as much as some people do. we're pretty fortunate. Our switches occur very gradually most of the time, where it almost kind of feels like the volume is going down on one and up on the other, and we kind of fade in really slowly. It's the fast switches, I think, that tend to give the headaches the most.
So there's a difference between switching sometimes is it like kind of a very unceremonious, just the light turns on and suddenly you're dealing with another altar, or what is it normally?
Yeah, there's so many different kinds. I mean, sometimes it'll be like somebody says something or we hear a song and somebody's just out, just boom. One person one second, and another person the next second. And sometimes it's a very gradual fade. Sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes it's a very, very dissociated, like, what's going on? I can't grasp reality at all kind of situation. Very different for everybody, and different between how much communication you have between Altar A and Altar B. Like, if you have great communication between each other, switching is going to go a lot easier than if you don't.
DID is so, like, my first real exposure to DID is a creator on TikTok, maybe even in this chat, Ace Wolfie. And they are actually a singer of a band. They're very cool. We even have on the show at one point. But their art changes, and like some altars have totally different art that they do, and things like that. My question is, you mentioned that there's communication between your altars. I saw this creator, Ace Wolfie, write a note to their altar before to actually ask them a question if they could show their art on TikTok, which I thought was both interesting and just very considerate. How would you say your altars really communicate? Is it just kind of a known thing, or is it?
So there's internal communication and external communication, and a lot of systems have to start with external because internal is very difficult, and it's still very difficult for us. We have a lot of notebooks and a lot of sticky notes, and we write a lot of stuff down. Sometimes I'll write the way my first time I ever had an altar communicate with me was my laptop. She would leave me like giant caps lock notes on my laptop so that when I opened it, I would see it. I also learn a lot through TikTok. Like, I've learned a lot about my system just watching everybody's videos and seeing how they answer questions and the kind of memes that they make. And I learn a lot through videos. Internal communication definitely comes over time, and it's easier for some systems than others. But sometimes, yeah, we can just talk in our heads. We hear each other's thoughts if we're, there's a term we use, co-conscious, where it's essentially we're both awake in the same space at the same time. If it's kind of like if one person's driving a car and you have somebody else in the passenger seat, one person's in control of the other of the body, but the other person's like kind of along for the ride. So sometimes we can talk in that space where we'll kind of just think back and forth through like either images or words or things like that. And I'll tell you, some of the funniest jokes happen inside my head. I've got some funny people up there, and it's hard because I'll be in the middle of like a class or just in the middle of like a professional thing, and somebody will say something really dumb up in the headspace, and I'm just like trying so hard not to
laugh. I've actually done schizophrenic story times where my hallucinations will say something and I'll bust out laughing and realize that it was a hallucination. I'm like, oh, great. So I'm just here laughing by myself. Awesome. Yep.
Hey, at least somebody laughs at your jokes, Cody.
I was laughing at my hallucinations jokes, actually, if you heard that correctly.
I tuned out for a minute.
I kind of figured.
It's funny because it catches you off guard, and I understand that like DID and schizophrenia, like we experience different kinds of hearing voices. Like I definitely experience more internal voices, and I know schizophrenia in general experiences external voices.
Yep.
And that's probably one of the reasons why they're often so confused, the two disorders, is because like, oh, the disorders that hear voices, they're the same one. But it's very different, and it is funny at times, and it catches you off guard. Like you're not expecting it at all.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask you, it seems that the more mental health creators we have on the show, and just the more my experiences talking with them, everyone who has a serious mental illness had to go through like at least two other diagnoses before they actually decided what was wrong. What is the most commonly misdiagnosed illness with DID? What is something that they think it is that they end up finding out it's not?
So one that's really close is BPD, borderline personality disorder. And there's a lot of similar symptoms. And a lot of times with BPD, from what I hear, I'm not an expert on BPD by any means, But from what I hear, there's such stark mood changes where you switch from one mindset to another mindset so quickly that it almost seems like two different people. So a lot of times those will be confused for each other, DID and BPD. It's also very common that BPD comes from childhood trauma as well. So that whole like coming from the same place, they seem to be confused a lot in therapy. We actually looked into, like, I looked into BPD with my therapist before DID was really a thing. My therapist is fortunately very, very careful about diagnosing, and she wasn't like ready to just slap a label on it the second she thought about it. Some therapists are like that, and people get misdiagnosed all the time.
Well, and like you said, also with misdiagnosis, so like I know with DID, BPD is really common. We had someone on the show who was specifically an advocate for BPD with schizophrenia.
Who was it?
It was Hot Raven.
So hot. Oh my God. Listening. So hot.
Okay. And anyways, with schizophrenia, the misdiagnosis tends to be bipolar disorder, which I didn't realize that was what my mom was misdiagnosed as. Also, one of my mutuals who has schizophrenia, they were originally diagnosed with bipolar as well. So it's interesting to see, like you said, some psychiatrists or doctors do tend to just slap a label on and then look back and go, well, maybe that's not right. Maybe this could be something else.
A lot of the time they do that just to get paperwork starting and get it cleared for insurance and bullshit like that. You know, you're dealing with those issues.
So yeah.
Here's a question that I feel like I have to be really cautious how I phrase. As far as treatment with BPD or with DID goes, I mean, because it sounds like in a lot of ways, DID is almost a necessary factor for your system to live and operate.
Absolutely.
So in the terms of knowing that, is there really treatment for this, or is it more just like therapeutic stuff to let you live with having DID and management and things like that?
That's a really interesting question. Especially because this has actually changed a lot over the course of time. Especially back when this was multiple personality disorder, the treatment plan was to fuse all the identity states into one, because that was healing. That was what it's supposed to be.
That was normal, quote unquote.
That was, yes. You try to get person back to normal was the goal. And that's still on the treatment plan for a lot of systems, and some systems choose to go that route. But nowadays it's actually very common for therapists and, you know, systems to work together and be like, okay, well, what's actually the healthiest way for you to live? Is it healthy to give you all the memories of your childhood that you weren't supposed to be able to handle? Or is it better to keep those separate and work on healing everybody individual and working on better communication and working together as a team? And that's something we refer to as functional multiplicity. There's, in general, from what I've seen, there's four phases of treatment for DID. And the first one deals with like addressing the trauma, essentially, is we're gonna do some trauma work. Let me see if I can remember these properly. So there's addressing the trauma work and establishing like equilibrium. Once you have kind of dug into these trauma memories, once you have shared them with each other, once you've broken down some of the amnesia barriers, now can you function as a person now that you have all these memories that you're trying to deal with? Then you work towards functional multiplicity, and phase four has always been final fusion, which is, you know, everybody comes together to become one.
Right.
And some people stay at stage three for the rest of their life, and that works for them. And some people progress on to phase four, where it's like partial fusion, where they'll have some people fuse and not others. So it's very individual for the system, like depending on what's right for them, you know?
One of the most amazing things about living in the time that we do, with just not only mental health, but just how we view things in society, is this is something that, not too long ago, the main goal was just to make you normal, to make you fit in with literally everyone else. Because at the end of the day, you're a nuisance to society, right? You're doing something different. Like, that was always the goal. And now we're able to look at it and say, maybe this is just how this person deals with trauma in their life. Maybe this is their mechanism and this needs to be handled in a better way. So I think it's kind of cool. We're getting closer to that place anyway.
You know what, Zach? I feel like we should go back to the 50s and 60s and just start shocking people with schizophrenia and DID again. Don't you think that's a better solution?
Why stop there?
Yeah, why stop there?
Let's go back to the days where we burned people at the stake for being witches. I mean,
exactly.
Ooh, I don't know about that one. I'm a gay Jew. I feel like I'd be pretty, I feel like I'd be definitely first up, and this meat ain't kosher, so no one burning this.
No, but yeah, it has progressed so much, and it's really cool to see with DID, schizophrenia, and all mental illnesses. But I actually have a question in the chat that I think is really cool, really relevant, and I don't know if you'll have the answer, but I wanted to bring it up. It says, under the American Disability Act, what are some reasonable accommodations that would be needed for someone with DID? So in case you don't understand the question, really, so like for schizophrenia, what I've always had is I've always been able to work in places that if I'm struggling, I'm either able to take an extended break, or back when I worked in production, they only put me in areas where I could listen to music while I was having auditory hallucinations so that I could focus on something besides the voices. Is there anything like that you can think of for DID when it comes to the workplace or school?
For school, I have accommodations, but not specifically for DID. So what I think I remember people talking about is has a lot to do with like note taking. So when you have DID and you're in school, notes are insanely important. Very, very detailed notes. So that, you know, you can go back and look if, you know, you have amnesia, which, you know, happens. So a lot of people will get like shared notes where they can like contact their classmates or the instructor and say, can I get the course notes for this lesson, you know, per lesson. So a lot of people will get like note accommodations and like have other people take notes for them. Those are the ones that I've heard of. Most of the time, the systems that I've talked to get accommodations for other comorbid things. And it's really hard with DID to figure out what the appropriate accommodations would be. I'm sure that there are some, and I just haven't heard of them.
The only one I ever used in college, and it was something that I didn't think of. It was another person with schizophrenia that I knew. They said... They told me, they were like, yeah, when I'm in class, I request a back seat. So that way I don't feel like that way I don't have hallucinations that there are people talking behind me or sitting behind me. And I started doing that, and I found that it did help a lot, because when I had hallucinations, you know, it was with my medication, I was able to rationalize it a little more. If they were in front of me or like in the front of the classroom, I'm like, wait, that doesn't make sense. But if they're behind you, you know, it's just someone talking and you glance back there and you don't look at them, because if you're sitting in a classroom, you're not going to look back and stare at someone, but you might like glance back to see them. And I found that that actually helped me. So that was something I started using in school as like a reasonable accommodation. So I just thought that was a really interesting question.
Yeah, I've found that for me personally, it depends on the instructor. I am more comfortable going to my instructor's personally and just explaining what specific accommodations I need, because it's really hard to go through ADA and get like blanket accommodations. At least for me, I've found that. Yep. Like I have one class, like one movement class that was like fairly like triggering for us. And I had to go to my instructor and explain like, hey, dealing with some PTSD, here's, you know, not detailed or anything. I was just like, you know, here's some of the issues. And I was like, can I specifically reserve this space for me to like be in so I can leave if I need to? And, you know, just so you know, if I like stop doing any of the work, that there's a reason for it and stuff like that. And he was very understanding and good about it. So I think it takes a lot of like having the initiative to go to your instructor and trying to feel out whether or not they're trustworthy or not. And that's a really hard thing to do, because not every instructor is going to be super understanding. Some of them are going to be like, get over it, you know, be like everybody else. And I've definitely had my experience with those too.
Zach, did you ever get accommodations, you know, for being incredibly short and like an old man in a young person's body?
Yeah, it's called a booster seat and a cane, you dick. Anyway, so here's a question for you. I know that at some point in time in any relationship, either platonic or romantic, anybody with a mental illness, you have to have that kind of uncomfortable conversation with your potential partner or partner. This seems like with somebody suffering from DID, you almost mandatory have to have a very intimate conversation about your mental health with pretty much anyone who's going to spend any amount of time around you. Is that, am I spot on with that? Or
Yeah. And it's really just, it comes down to, I would definitely encourage, like, we actually made a YouTube video about this too, with, and involves my partner, who I've been with since before I found out I had DID. So he kind of made that discovery along with me, which was very helpful, because we kind of, he helped me work through it and did the journey with me rather than me having to sit him down and be like, so this is what's up. But I've definitely had to explain that in friendships, and it is awkward, but I think it's worth it, because the people you're close to, if they're really worth investing in, then they're going to be the ones to come alongside you in the tough shit and be like, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter what's going on. Like, we're going to be supportive, blah, blah. I have very, very close friends who have embraced it and become fully supportive. I'm very careful about which friends I tell, and the people that are closest to me, they're the ones that know. And the people that I don't feel would respond well, I keep them with certain boundaries in place and understand that this relationship only goes this far. But with a partnership, it's absolutely very important, because your partner's going to want to know who they're dating. And you have to have that conversation. And it's easy for everybody, because there are some systems that are like, they kind of do like a polyamorous thing, and they have multiple people dating one partner, or they have multiple alters dating different people externally. Or sometimes it's just what, so in my system, it's just me dating my partner, and anybody in our agreement is kind of like anybody else that forges a relationship with them, they can figure that out individually. And if that's something they want to do together, then they can go forward with it. But between me and my partner, this system and my partner, we're keeping it monogamous. Again, different for everybody, but he definitely needs to know, you know, like, he's not going to want to kiss my dude alter who's asexual, you know, like,
gotcha, yeah.
He needs to kind of keep up with that. So it's definitely important to share those things with your partner, for sure.
I think a really a cool point that you brought up that I just wanted to touch on is a lot of people who deal with mental illness of any kind, I know we have this anxiety when it comes to making friends or relationships and stuff like that, but we, on the show, we'd really like to push people, as long as you're within your realm of comfort, if you have these open and honest communications and conversations with people about your mental health, yes, some people are going to be freaked out and run. But anybody who has a mental illness, who has a support system, will tell you the ones who stick around are infinitely better than your average person's friends. Your average friend with a normal neurotypical friendship, you're allowed certain things. You can fuck up, blah, 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 blah. But if someone's your friend and you are suffering from mental illness and they're there for everything, that's not just a friend. That's a definite relationship that is worth something. So just keep that in mind, people out there.
Yeah, and that's, I think that it's so important to find those people, because especially for you know, people that have dealt with childhood trauma, a lot of times that comes from family, and you need to build your own family. So it's really important to find those people and to do that, especially because family isn't always going to be supportive. You can choose your friends. You can't, unfortunately, choose like your biological family. So you kind of need to make your own sometimes. So I definitely agree with that. I would say in general, it's, in my experience, it's way more successful trying to talk to friends about this than it is to family, because friends can choose you, and family's right. Just what the fuck do I do with you now?
Like, I think with family, there's always that begrudging, like, I don't have an option out of this. You know, like, I have to deal with your shit.
Yeah.
Just because we are getting to like the last 10 minutes here, if it's all right with you, Aurelia, I was going to open up for some questions from some of our live viewers. I do want to take a little time to, you know, say thank you for coming on. I do appreciate it. For those of you who don't know, she did not know that she was going to be on this podcast this morning. So we always appreciate when someone can jump in.
Yeah,
because otherwise it's just me and Zach roasting each other for an hour, which some people like, but they got to get sick of it.
which is okay. But I think if we do another one of those episodes, we're going to get an angry email from the sponsors. So
yeah. So someone just said they jumped in kind of late, but they just want to verify how many alters you have.
As far as we know, there's 8 of us. That number can vary so much, though, with people.
You did say at the beginning you were a system 8. Does that mean the amount of alters, or is that like your level?
I'm tier 8.
Okay.
You have to level up. Like, every time you get a new alter, you level up. That's essentially.
Do you eventually get like a gym bag or a gym badge?
Yeah. It comes with a subscription. You get packages.
Love everything about it.
Oh my goodness. Salty French fry. So this is actually not a question for you, but Salty French fry wanted to know if the Manscaped code still works.
And question. Yes, the Manscaped code does still work. And if you want to get 20% off or free shipping with your order on manscaped.com, use the code GALAWOP.
Yeah.
Just to remind people, what is the product our lovely sponsor provides, Cody?
So we do have the lawnmower 3.0. We also were given some ball toner and ball deodorant, all amazing products. But as Zach said last episode, we have also been hearing from a lot of our female followers who have bought this product and used it and really enjoyed it. So just because they advertise for men does not mean it is only a man's product.
And remember, boys, summer is coming up. That means you need the lawnmower 3.0 to not only keep things short and cool, but the ball deodorant to keep your stuff not rank.
And before we get back to the questions, just a reminder that Zach can finally shave his old man balls. All right, back to the questions.
So much. I can't wait for you to die.
I'm really honored to have been a part of this. I'll just say that now.
Some of our I don't think we warned you that Manscaped was our sponsor, did we? I think we should probably start warning people that, because then we just go into like talking about shaving our balls, and I don't think any of our guests are really prepared for that.
Yeah, really. Maybe if one of your ultras would be interested, we could give them the code. I don't know. I mean, that's a thing.
Only if it comes with a set of balls, though. You know.
Well, that I would have to reach out to our guy at Manscaped and see if they could work something out there. Anyway,
yo Dominic, this customer wants actual balls with their stuff. It doesn't happen,
right? So someone just asked, is Aurelian Company on TikTok?
Yes, we're on TikTok. Aurelian Company, it's at the little streamy thing at the bottom of the screen, hopefully. We're also on YouTube under Partly Cloudy, Partly Sunny, and you can ask any question you want on either of those, and we'll answer it if we can.
All right. So we have a question here. It says, "I don't want to sound disrespectful." Not a great way to start a question from my experience. But this is a question from someone who knows nothing about DID. Are headspaces like the system's brain living room, for lack of a better term?
Kind of. The term headspace is kind of loose. So some people use it as just like whoever is like co-conscious, whoever is like conscious with you and can see what's going on and doing life with you and stuff. Some people use it as like the inner mindscape where all the alters hang out when they're not fronting and they're not co-conscious. So it's kind of just like a brain living room, if you will, for everybody.
I like that. I like that analogy.
I am genuinely surprised at how that question turned out, because usually it's like, I don't want to be disrespectful or anything, but black people, am I right? Like that's usually the comment that comes after that shit. So, I mean, that was surprisingly good.
Well, usually I read the comments before I put them up, but that one was really long, so I was like, oh, this is going to be a good one. And then I pulled it up, and I saw the first thing it said was, don't mean to be disrespectful. And I was like, oh, maybe I should take this down before I read it out loud. But yeah, that was actually not a terrible one. So we have one here that says, I've heard of people having alters based off of characters. Do you have any of those?
I personally do not, but that's definitely a valid thing. They're called introjects or fictives. And yeah, people will like literally introject characters from like media and have them living in their head. It's part of the coping mechanism. Totally valid.
I've actually never heard of that.
I've never heard of that either.
Well, yeah, Zach, you haven't heard of anything, Zach. So
that's also valid. Doesn't make my point any less true.
So this question says, when an alter isn't out or in front, what do they see?
So different for every system. Sometimes, like we've talked about, there's a living room inside, or sometimes there's like an entire planet in some people's heads. Like it's really different for everybody. For my system, it's basically you're either asleep or you're in the car driving it or in the passenger seat. That's pretty much the options with my system.
That's interesting. So kind of follow up to that. When your system, like, do your systems or your alters kind of communicate with each other to like fill each other in on what happened while they were asleep? Is that kind of what happens?
So this is interesting because so this is not the case for every system. I'll put that out there right now. In my system, the reason we're called the cloud is because we have an information database that we upload to. We upload like memories for just like daily stuff. So that way, if somebody wakes up and doesn't know what's going on, they can like quote unquote download stuff from the cloud of like memories. Be like, "Wait, this is what we're doing. This is where I am. This is who I'm with. This is what day it is." Not everybody has that, but that's how it works for us. Download.
You literally just asked if her alters have a shift change. That's what you just asked.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Relevant question.
I know it happens. I just thought it was funny because that's how I pictured it in my mind. You know how one shift comes in 30 minutes before the other. They fill each other in. So someone asked if it's okay for them to ask what your alter's names are.
Yep. So there's me, Aurelia. I'm the host. We have Seven, who's our male alter. He's the only male in our system. River, who's a teen alter, she's a protector. We have Amethyst, who's an emotional protector. We have Elle, who's a young girl, and she'll age slide from like 8 to 12, anywhere in between. Who am I missing? We have a new one who does not have a name yet. She has not chosen her name. We have Natalie, and I'm missing somebody. Bryn, she's the other one.
Huh. So here's a question for you. Do you have any tattoos? Okay, so when you're gonna get a tattoo, do you like consult your alters? Like, do they talk about it, or is it like, does your alter wake up and like, the fuck is this? Like, I don't even like that.
I mean, now I have a pineapple on my arm. What the fuck?
Right? Yeah.
What happens for a lot of systems actually, where they'll wake up and they're like, this is a tattoo I didn't agree to. For us in general, I'll kind of okay it with everybody. Since I'm the host, they kind of just allow me to do what I want. And they're like, yeah, as long as it's not ridiculous, we're okay with it. Just let us know what you're going to do. So I kind of will just be like, okay, this is kind of what I'm thinking. And we'll kind of like mull it over. Like this one, we only have one tattoo. And that took like a year to like kind of mull over and be like, yeah, we're doing this.
Well, at least you're not going to have any tattoo regret. I mean, I feel like you probably give more consideration to your tattoos than I have. So, I mean,
well, when there's 8 people weighing in on a tattoo, like sometimes I forget to ask my wife about my tattoos, like right. Way less of a chance of tattoo regret there, but
I didn't even ask your wife about any of my tattoos. So
why would you, Zach?
I just wanted to be involved.
I know. But we are closing in on our last couple minutes here. Aureli, I really wanted to thank you for joining us today and being so open. Obviously, you know, we did kind of throw you in here a little last minute, and I really appreciate your flexibility jumping in and hanging out with us for an hour.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast.
Absolutely. And remember, guys, if you have any topics that you want to see on the show, specifically celebrating Mental Illness Awareness Month, I think that's the official title, let us know in a DM, in a video on TikTok, what are some of the topics that you don't feel are represented enough, and what can we talk about for you? So again, thank you to Aureli and company. Amazing guest. I mean, this is a hard show to be on. Okay, for anyone out there who's being a creator, there are shows that are easy to be on and there's shows that are hard to be on as far as podcasts go. In this, you kind of get thrown to the wolves, and you definitely did a really good job, and we really appreciated you being here.
This isn't like a super professional, we get you in here 2 hours before, check mic, check audio, run through all the questions. No, this is a, hey, you want to be on the show? Perfect. Jump in 10 minutes beforehand and we'll ask you some questions as we think of them. So it definitely does take a lot of trust to come on the show with us. And we do recognize that as well.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add, or you want to plug your at real again quick for YouTube and Tik?
Sure. TikTok is Relly and Company, R-E-L-I and company. Same thing for Instagram. On YouTube, it's partly cloudy, partly sunny. It's my system and the other system, just kind of talking about mental health and stuff. So yeah, thanks guys.
Very awesome. Cool. Zach, any final words for the people?
Stay woke, sheeple.
I should have known it was coming. I should have seen it coming.